Welcome to Hiring Insights, the podcast that provides insight into the executive hiring process and experience. Whether you are a job seeker, a people leader, a recruiter, an executive coach, or simply interested in talent, there is something here for you on Hiring Insights. Today's episode is presented by Top Talent Advocates, where we advocate for executive and legal talent. You can learn more about Top Talent Advocates, listen to other episodes, and hire great talent by visiting toptalentadvocates.com and clicking on podcast. Now, here is your host for Hiring Insights, Moussa Fernandez-Goodman. Prior to the release of this episode, Tom O'Connor and Guardian Industries agreed on a mutual separation, allowing Tom the time to travel south and spend much-needed quality time with his ailing father.
Tom, Lem, George, thank you so much for joining us for the second portion of your podcast and your episode of Hiring Insights. I know our listeners are thrilled with what they've learned from you in the first portion of the episode. And now we're going to be moving on to some insights for job seekers and insights for hiring managers. But for those who are just catching this episode and not necessarily as familiar with each of you as I am or as listeners to the first episode, I'm hoping that you might reintroduce yourselves to our audience. So let's start with Tom. Tom, who are you? Where do you work? And why do you love what you do? And then we'll work our way around.
I am Tom O'Connor. I'm the Vice President of Compliance and Ethics, EH&S and Stewardship for one of Koch Industries' recently acquired facilities or companies in Michigan. I've been with Koch for about 25 years, been a practicing lawyer for, good gracious, over 30 years now, and avid New York Mets fan and avid history leader. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks so much, Tom. Lem.
I'm Lem Montgomery. I'm from Madison, Mississippi. I'm a member of the Butler Snow Law Firm. We started in Mississippi, but we're now 350 plus attorneys, 17 plus offices strong. We're primarily in the southeastern United States, including a couple of international offices. Spent my career of 20 years at Butler Snow doing litigation and trial work, starting with products liability and civil rights work, commercial litigation, and finally catastrophic claims and defense of catastrophic cases, litigation cases. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here, Lem. Appreciate it. And George.
Hey, Moussa. Glad to be here. My name is George Zaharatos. I'm a partner with the Trade and Customs Group here at KPMG. I'm a licensed U.S. customs broker. I'm based in Atlanta with my family. I've been with the firm 18 years. I've traveled over 30 countries visiting, you know, sites that produce goods that are imported into the U.S. and exported from the U.S. Diverse amount of experiences handling anything from imports and duties to export sanctions and embargoes, forced labor type of work with U.S. Customs, and just very interesting stuff that keeps me going every day. And I'm glad to be here.
Thanks so much. And I heard you're also a Met fan. Is that right?
That is right. That is right. And you're outnumbered today, Moussa.
Okay. All right. Well, try not to hold that against you and throw you the Met-friendly questions. Okay. As high-level summaries you might be able to provide, could you just give us your sense for what the job market looks like now at the executive level primarily? But what do you see and what's your perception of it here in 2023?
I think a lot of companies still deal with post-COVID issues, right? Where I am, dealing with coming back to the office. And the office environment is a struggle for some people. But look, connectivity is much different than it ever was in the past. And like for my team example, we're scattered throughout the world. So staying connected with those individuals is absolutely critical. As far as hiring is concerned, I think certainly from our end, we're being a lot more pragmatic in our approach and how we look at positions that we need, who we hire and that kind of thing. Really going through requisitions for positions and determining someone we bring in needs to bring a comparative advantage to us to drive a competitive advantage. And everything that emanates from that is really what we're focused on. Not necessarily having a skill set that we're looking for, but we're looking for the right cultural fit, the right individuals to come and join us. And from my perspective, from my team, I don't have open positions. I don't have closed positions. If someone's going to bring someone to the table, I will have room for them. I will find a spot for them. In the same sense, if someone's not aligned with our principles and our culture, then they really need to make those tough employment decisions earlier than later.
And Tom, that's really interesting. So you're the type of executive who, if you find the right talent, regardless of whether or not there's a quote unquote open position or a slot, it sounds like there's an opportunity there, which is something that our clients find often, right? Is maybe it's not a position that's been posted, but it's the right person who can add a tremendous amount of value. So the same question to you, George and Lem, but hoping one of you, and maybe it's back to you, Tom, can build on that concept of just finding the great talent for the right role.
I've inherited a couple other capabilities since I've been at Guardian. In one of them, an employee was joining us before I inherited that particular capability. But when she got here, I realized that her skill set didn't lend itself to what we thought we needed. A position was almost recreated for her based on her skill set and her knowledge. She's one of the best employees that I've got right now. In fact, my three top employees that I've got all came from different roles, different responsibilities within the organization, but they had that drive, they had that vision, they had that connectivity with our businesses that are absolutely critical. So yeah, we've got room for anyone who's willing to contribute.
George, Lem, things to add?
I do. I think it's different for talent coming straight out of school than it would be for executives. You know, for new entrants to the market, the job market right now, I think, you know, there's a need for mentorship, there's hands-on learning, you know, so I do see more of our new hires wanting to be in the office. Folks, you know, that were able to live through the COVID, you know, work from home period, found that that may be a more optimal state and then, you know, aren't returning as fast, but the younger, you know, just coming out of college group is taking more to the fact that it's easier to learn when you're, you know, physically together and able to work out problems to solutions. On the executive front, it's versatility. I think being able to navigate everything that's going on right now. I'll give you an example. And, you know, I did do some research before to see if KPMG had done any specific surveys on talent and recruiting. And we had a survey that was sent out. It's called Tax Reimagined 2022 Perspectives from the C-Suite. And it did include a lot of the C-suite saying that they look for candidates that have data and analytics experience, cloud experience, things that, you know, you wouldn't have really heard of 10 years ago. And I think, you know, the versatility that executives need to have is to be understanding of how you could use these different tools so that they can meet objectives in the marketplace today. And, you know, how you can actually review the people's work when they're using those tools, right? How do you know if the data and analytics that are used are right? So there's a lot that executives need to do today that we didn't need to do, you know, 10, 20 years ago. And, you know, I think our range has to be a lot wider in order for us to succeed, where before it was like you could be extremely focused and deep in a certain area and still be, you know, great at what you do. Today, you need to focus on being a people manager, a data manager, you know, making sure to understand how diverse your team is and the benefits of it and being able to navigate what we're still working with which Tom already mentioned, which is, you know, people not wanting to be in the work office in the traditional workspace on a daily basis.
Lem, I'm going to ask you a little bit of a different question. About half of our client base are attorneys, and that's about the listenership to this podcast. So I'm wondering if someone is looking for a more senior level role, perhaps a partner with a portable book of business or sort of that senior level associate, what advice would you give to them as they're starting their job search, right? They're looking to join a firm like yours or looking to maybe even go in-house, which I know you know a lot of clients who probably make that transition at some point in their career, as Tom did and other folks. And then we'll come back to Tom and George and hear from them about how they want to manage or how they think people should manage your job search. But what simple, clear advice would you give to someone who's starting that search?
Well, I can tell you all law firms at times hire based on need. We do it. Other firms do it. So if there's a need for attorneys to service clients, if there's a need for an attorney with a certain practice, firms will go out and recruit those attorneys with that practice or with that skill set. And that's one way you can market yourself, is you can look introspectively at what you're able to offer, whether it's a certain client or client base or a certain skill set, and try to find a firm that matches that need. You know, right now, firms are projecting a need to herbs. I think it's probably a good time for attorneys who are looking to make a change or looking to find a career that mode. But I'll tell you, for our firm, it's always, we don't just hire based on need. Sort of to Tom's point, if we find the attorney that fits our culture, we'll make that hire, whether there's a current need or not. For our firm, it's always been about our clients' needs and interests first. It's all about client service. Client service is preeminent. And then there is a culture here at our firm that it has to be a match when we make a hire. So when we find attorneys that have the right kind of practice, the right kind of skill set, they're a cultural fit, and they frankly fit into the family. A law firm hires, but it's based on practice group needs a lot of times. And so, for example, we just found a young lawyer who's starting tomorrow who was a perfect fit, and she's coming in, and we wouldn't have passed her up. You know, it's such a good fit, we would have hired, whether there's a need or not. And so I would say the advice would be, understand what your skills are, understand what you have to offer, and be honest about that both with yourself and with the potential employer, the law firm, but also listen carefully to law firms when they talk about their culture and the way they service clients and the way they interact with one another and compensate one another. The firm principles, usually firms are founded on a certain set of principles or on a certain culture, and make sure that you fit with that. And make sure that where you want to be, and that's the culture you want to be in. And then if it is, make sure they understand that you're interested and that you're in for that. And that's the way I think firms marry up with new talent. That's the best way if you're looking for long-term retention of talent and attorneys who are going to be lifelong members. That's usually the way it starts.
Tremendous. Thanks so much, Lem. Really appreciate it.
Real quick, in that score, the advice that I would give to someone is understand yourself. Why is it that you're looking? Why is it that you're looking to make this career change or this job change? Is it money? Probably not. It's probably about appreciation. Are you appreciated? Do you appreciate the company? Are you committed to them? Are they committed to you? That's usually what drives these things, but really soul search there. Make sure that what it is that you're looking for and where you're going, that you're dissatisfied where you are and there's an opportunity for you.
So for those of you who are hiring talent and looking to bring on talent, curious to know how you think social media plays a role in your process and your decision making. Any tidbits to share, Tom, Lem?
Well, I could tell you most from someone who is a bit of a novice in the area, whereas my children are about experts in it. I will tell you that anything that is out there in the ether on social media will be found by your prospective employer. Not that you shouldn't have an opinion, you have some strong opinions. Just make sure that you understand that the position you take may not be shared by everyone else. We look at that. I certainly look at that. I want to know an individual what they're holding themselves out to be. Now, from my perspective, I don't find social media, whether it be LinkedIn or any other social media platform, to be terribly useful in my analysis as to whether someone should join us. It more is a detractor than it is a benefit.
Got it. Really good point. Thank you, Tom. Lem, anything to add on the social media front?
I personally think social media is an invaluable tool for applicants, but it's just that. It's just one tool. It opens up lines of communication and contacts that just didn't exist when I was involved in the job search. It's an excellent research tool. It's a way to see who you are in various industries and see what people are talking about and what they're interested in, what's trending about employers and job seekers. So it's a real finger on the pulse of the job market and industry groups that shouldn't be ignored. But I think social media alone is just not a substitute for networking and personal contact and traditional job application, followed by in-person interviews. You know, when it comes to the actual process of finding and pursuing a job opportunity at a specific company, I think the employer wants their applicants to follow their process. And I think they invest in hiring through their own channels, and you have to work within those channels to be competitive. So I would say use it, learn from it, use it for research, use it to make content. You want to be serious about marketing yourself for a job, especially with a specific company. You've got to go through their channels, and you've got to go through the classic application process that's out there. I'm not sure that, you know, your profile on LinkedIn, as especially as a new young applicant, has that much of an impact on helping you get a job. I mean, it needs to be, you know, you need to pay attention to it, but it needs to be there, and it, you know, it can be somewhat of a help, although not too much, in my opinion. I think it can, if you're not careful, be a major detraction, depending on what you decide to post. So if you're in the job market, you got to know, it's an absolute 100% guarantee that employers are going to research your social media accounts and see what you have out there. And if, you know, things that portray you in a negative way, you're going to definitely hurt the job search. And so you've got to pay attention to that.
This question's really focused and directed towards Tom and George. A lot of folks that are listening to this episode either want to move in-house as an attorney or rising through the ranks, most likely the type of people who are your clients, George. So I guess I'm looking to understand and to have some light shed on the fact of, you know, your views and insights into the hiring process. So what are some of the things that each of you are looking for to gauge talent and understand about a candidate when they're in front of you? What are just some of those things that you're always looking for?
Well, most I could start. And you know, just so you know, my team is made up of attorneys, could be trade attorneys, human rights attorneys, CPAs, previous customs officials. So really diverse group. When I work with my team and they connect with our clients, it's because of their experiences. And it's because of, you know, the fact that, you know, our client base, the executives we work with, they're not all the same. They all have their own story and their own journey. What's important when I see the folks that we're working with, C-level executives, is that they all have a few traits that are common for me when I speak to them. They're extremely good listeners. The other thing is that they ask really good questions. They're alert. They're present. The other thing is that's important to me that I see from all of them is that they're empathetic. They actually, you know, take time to think about what is it that their team is thinking, and how is it that their team could function better. I think Tom made a point earlier that said, you know, you leverage strengths. It's not that people are no good generally. It's that maybe they're not put to the right task. And so I think a good leader, you know, identifies folks and is able to build them up and pull them up as they're rising up to be able to address some of the objectives at hand. And not everybody is perfect at everything. So you need to be able to recognize when your team needs to be adjusted slightly to meet those objectives.
George, you know, those answers are almost word for word some of the guidance that Bill George, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not, but former CEO of Medtronic and Goldman Sachs board member, Target. He was our first guest on the podcast. It's funny to watch that advice come full circle, right? And then, you know, being empathetic and figuring out how to maximize their teams in a really holistic way. I think that's consistent from not only your vantage point in the consulting world, but also from his vantage point. So thanks so much for that opportunity to bring it full circle. Tom?
Yeah, mostly. So just building on what George mentioned there, you know, by the time a candidate gets in for the interview, right, you've got the skill set. It's come across. We know you've got the skill set. You've got it. I want to hear it, though. I want to hear the passion that led you to where you are sitting before us and having a conversation. It's important that you don't fake you. Don't come in with something you think we want to hear. Be you, be genuine, but connect us to those opportunities that have led you to where we are and what we need. A lot of people call that now the behavior-based interviewing process. And yeah, we engage in that. We certainly do. But it's to drive the conversation. I'm not so much interested in the situation, behavior, and outcome of the specific story you're telling. I want to know what impact it had on you and how you came to be and how these these competing interests arrived at your decision making and what you learned from it, particularly ones that you failed. Be conversational, be present, and don't fake view.
Couldn't have said it any better, Tom. So great. That's the authenticity and genuineness of people is easily detected, right? So you want to be yourself and come and present yourself exactly as you are, because that's who you're going to be working with, and that's how you want to be known and perceived. So great words, great insights there. Thanks, Tom. I'm going to start with Lem, and we're going to kind of do a rapid fire here on what is the biggest red flag you see when you're talking to someone, not necessarily coaching them on how to avoid it, but what are some of those, oh, I can't believe someone said that, or I can't believe someone, you know, views themselves in that way. Just some horror stories. So Lem, the litigator, over to you. What's a red flag you've seen in your experience?
Yeah. So I think the general way to say it is just an immature approach to the position. You know, candidates who come in and they're more concerned about what office and what town they're going to be in. You know, we've heard them say, because I like to go see bands, and, you know, so I want to be in Nashville office. It's less about the law firm, more about location. Hyper focus on compensation over, you know, what the law firm does. Not that those are unfair questions. You know, what we encourage everybody to be direct. You can tell the difference in the direct conversation about that versus it consumes the whole interview. We hire lawyers with the expectation that they'll be partners. And if they come through and say, hey, I'm just in this gig for a couple of years, then I'm on to politics, you know, that's a major red flag. So we hire with the expectation that these are going to be our partners one day. I want to hear why you want to be a lawyer. You've done all this work. You've graduated in the very top of your class. You're clearly able to. Why do you want to do it? And why do you want to do it here? Is it because of some frivolous reason that doesn't matter to us? Or are you really invested in what we're doing and who we are? And so answers that shy away from that, answers that invest in us, answers tell us you're a fit for us and we're a fit for you, and you have a passion and a reason to be doing this that fits with our firm's purpose and culture, that's on the money. That's what we're looking for.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Lem. George or Tom, horror stories, insights, things to keep in mind.
I'll hit this real quick. There's a fine line between confidence and arrogance. You know, we've all met the individual who's come in supremely confident, but it bleeds into arrogance. It's always those, you know, those behavior-based questions that we talked about earlier, where the individual took a big pile of mess that somebody else created and fixed it. And that's the only thing you ever get. You never get the real self-inflection of how I could have improved in what I did. And arrogance comes across, and it's a killer.
George?
There is a sense of an investment that we make in folks as well. And we want that investment to play out. And you don't want someone who's going to come in thinking that they know more than everybody else. So mine is a little bit different in that I always look for whether or not folks are going to be good team players. Are they going to be collaborative? Are they going to work together with my team properly? Are they going to work together with our clients properly and be able to, you know, solve problems, come up with solutions in a collaborative way? And right. I think it goes, you know, similar to what Tom had mentioned, which is, you know, if you find that you're asking questions and, you know, folks are very much interested into only what they can achieve or what they could tell others to do, without, you know, some team building type of experiences, sometimes that would be a red flag to me.
Final question of the episode. For those contemplating their job search or looking for a new opportunity, what's the best piece of advice you could give them today? Tom, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I'll take it, Melissa. Thanks. Thanks for having us. This has been a great dialogue, great discussion. When I created the vision for the Compliance Ethics Program where I'm at, it was built on four pillars, and that is action, urgency, ownership, and respect. If you can have a vision without action, that's like having a guard dog without teeth or decaffeinated coffee, quite frankly. You have got to drive it. You have got to have the action and the urgency to drive the company's vision or your own personal vision. Own it and after it. No excuses. Action, urgency, and ownership are absolutely critical. And also doing that with the utmost respect for everyone else that you've come in contact with and that you're working with.
Great, great, great words, Tom. Thanks so much. Lem.
Have good, detailed conversations and expectations and what you want out of your career with your potential employer. Be honest about who you are and seek great mentors. Pay attention to who you're going to be working with and make sure that they're going to be willing to invest in you.
Wonderful. George, question to you.
Yeah, I think there's something for everyone. And, you know, you may not get the perfect job, but I think you point in the right direction. Go seek where it is that you want to be spending your time, where you think you'll have passion, where you'll have interest, where you'll be engaged, right? Eventually, you could hone that in and actually, you know, progress towards more and more of what you want to be doing. I think it's a progression. It really is. My advice to folks is stay interested, stay engaged, work hard, and pay it forward. When you help people, they'll help you. I learn more from my staff and my managers than I do from most folks. And I feel like it's because that there's an open dialogue with them and they're always looking out for me just as much as I'm looking out for them.
Wonderful.
And I would add one more thing. I truly believe that there's always a fit. I've been blessed with what I think is an extremely interesting career. It's been one for me. I've enjoyed every minute of it. There's a career out there for every applicant that they can enjoy. So don't sell yourself short. You know, if you're not interested in what you're doing, life's too short. So keep at it. Find the fit. Be honest when you market yourself. And I believe with time, anybody that's willing to put in the work can get there.
Wonderful. Guys, I know I only knew one of you coming in, but I feel like I know each of you a lot better now. And I really appreciate it. So thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us on Hiring Insights. Remember, you can learn more about Top Talent Advocates and listen to other episodes by visiting toptalentadvocates.com and click on the podcast link. You can also email us at tta@toptalentadvocates.com.